How's it going, everybody? You're listening to The Raven's Grove. I'm your host, Dahi, and this is the second part of our segment, Shipwreck Stories, where I'll be exploring some of the stories about some of the world's most famous shipwrecks. I'm sorry it's been so long since I last put an episode. I've been dealing with a lot of stuff, but let's just say I'm back now, so everything's good. So today we're going to be taking a closer look at some of the most wealthy shipwrecks ever to be lost to the depths of maritime history. We're going to be talking about the 1715 Treasure Fleet, the Flor de la Mar, the deepest shipwreck ever salvaged in maritime history, the SS of Cairo, and perhaps the richest shipwreck of all time, the San Jose. Be warned, this episode of The Raven's Grove features the following trigger warnings. Death mentions, drowning mentions, warfare mentions, starvation mentions, treasure hunting mentions, and bureaucracy mentions. So if any of those are in any way an issue for you, please give this episode a miss. Also, I'd like to extend my warmest thanks to Mel King and the team at 1715 Treasure Fleet Queen's Jewels for their invaluable help in researching this episode, and I wish them all the very best in their future salvage operations. Finally, I'd like to make it very clear from the outset that any and all conclusions in this episode are reaching this episode are mine and mine alone unless explicitly stated otherwise, and should be viewed as opinions, not as definite fact. Alright, so now those are out of the way, let's get this voyage underway. So the first shipwreck I'm going to talk about today is actually a whole fleet of ships, 1715 Treasure Fleet. The date? July 24th, 1715, a fleet of Spanish ships depart Havana, Cuba, for Seville, Spain. Conflicting reports indicate that 12 ships, possibly more, possibly less, set sail, one of which was a French boat, Le Griffon, which was part of the convoy. The 1715 Treasure Fleet was responsible for transporting New World cargo, including treasure, to Spain, which had been at war for 12 years and was eager to bolster its economy with wealth acquired in Central and South America. Once the War of Succession, known in America and England as Queen Anne's War, which went from May 15, 1702 to September 7, 1714. Once Queen Anne's War ended, King Philip V of Spain commissioned the Treasure Fleet to deliver the stockpile of gold and silver they had been building up. The ships left Cuba heavily loaded with both documented and contraband treasure and set their course through the Straits of Florida to follow the Gulf Stream and across the Atlantic Ocean to Spain. However, on July 31st, 1715, a hurricane hit and wrecked all but Le Griffon, which had sailed out ahead of the rest of the fleet against the reefs just off the coast of eastern Florida in an area now referred to as the Treasure Coast. Some of the ships were purposely run into the shore, sinking in shallow water, which allowed the surviving Spanish to establish camps and salvage what they could for the royal treasure over the next 2 years. Pirates and boats from other countries likely fished the wrecks in the years to follow, but eventually the disaster and the record of it faded into history. In 1928, one of the ships was assumed to be, by some, to be the Arca de Lima, was discovered by William Beach north of Fort Pierce Inlet and heavily salvaged over the next 50 years. It didn't contain any royal treasure, but it did contain private chests of silver. Its historical significance was not understood until later. In the 1980s, Florida stopped issuing salvage permits on the wreck and opened it as the state's first underwater archaeological preserve. In 1941, Charles Dana Higgs, a retired astronomer and historian, discovered a Spanish survivors and salvage camp, known as the Higgs Site, where the modern-day McClarty Treasure Museum is located just south of Sebastian Inlet. He connected the site to the 1715 Treasure Fleet, and during the 1940s, an archaeological survey of the area concluded the site was very likely a 1715 survivor and salvage camp, a pirate hangout, or a Native American camp that occurred soon after the wrecks, which as a contained material associated with the wrecks. Now, though Spanish coins had been found on local beaches and what appeared to be shipwreck debris, including cannons set for after storms during the first half of the 20th century, no successful attempts were made to salvage the wrecks. Some locals believed it just offshore. The wrecks that some locals believed to be just offshore were made until the 1960s. Multiple entries and conducted research and held permits to explore, but the most fruitful of these was held by Kip Wagner, who, along with his physician and friend Dr. Kip Kelso and a newly formed company, Real 8 Corporation, discovered and secured leases on 6 wrecks between Sebastian Inlet to the north and just south of Fort Pierce Inlet to the south. Wagner, a construction worker who relocated to Florida from Ohio, and Dr. Kelso worked together to determine if the existing clues pointed to the 1715 Treasure Fleet. It was at that time assumed that the wrecks occurred further south near the Florida Keys. In 1959, Dr. Kelso connected the written work and a 1775 map of Florida found in British cartographer Bernard Roman's A Concise History of East and West Florida with the area just south of Sebastian Inlet. A notation here on the map stated, opposite this river perished the admiral commanding the Plate Fleet 1715, the rest of the Fleet 14 in number between this and Bleach Yard. The Bleach Yard was near Fort Pierce Inlet. Since then, priceless artifacts including gold, silver, and emeralds have been recovered offshore by leaseholders and subcontractors who dive and excavate the wrecks each summer when the ocean is calm enough for shallow water diving. They continue to reveal the story of a tragic maritime disaster during the colonial period. The lease was owned for a long time by the Fisher family. Mel Fisher himself contributed to treasure discoveries on the wrecks before and after his famous finding of the Atocha wreck off the coast of Key West in 1985. The company known as 1715 Fleet Queen's Jewels currently holds the lease and to excavate and works with a number of subcontractors to bring up amazing finds each summer. As dictated by the Federal Admiralty lease, the state of Florida receives up to 20% of the artifacts found on each site after each salvage season for inclusion in museum displays. Now, you might be wondering, how much are all these shipwrecks worth? Well, the Atocha wreck, which I mentioned just before, was the subject of a major court battle between Mel Fisher and the Florida legal system, which was finally settled in 1985. At that time, the wreck was valued at $400 million. Now, that in 2023 is roughly equivalent to $1,120,000,000 US, $1,668,000,000 Australian, $900 million Great British pounds. $1,506,000,000 Canadian, €1,021,000,000 Euro, $34,268,000,000 Taiwan New Dollars, $11,850,000,000 Kronor, $20,213,000,000 pesos from Mexico, or $11,575,000,000 Swedish Kronor. Now, that obviously puts it pretty far up in the running for the title of most valuable shipwreck found so far, but there are other ones that are higher. I'll be talking about one of them at the end of this episode. However, the surprising thing is, the original ship manifest of the 1715 Treasure Fleet state a total cargo value of only 14 million Spanish reales. That's not per ship, mind. That's across the entire fleet. Now, according to Mel King of 1715 Fleet Queen's Jewels, a Spanish real had the same buying power as a US dollar in 1715. This leads us to a very interesting calculation answer. If the original manifests are to be believed and the total cargo value for the entire fleet is only 14 million reales, then the total value of the fleet when the hurricane struck was only about 961 million US in 2023. This is equivalent to 1,413 million Australian, 773 million Great British pounds, 1,294 million Canadian, 876,400,000 Euro, 29,423 million Taiwan New Dollars, 10,179 mil Swiss Norwegian Kronor, 17,357 mil Mexican pesos, or 9,945 mil Swedish Kronor. In addition, people involved in the salvage of the Atocha and with 1715 Fleet Queen's Jewels believe that just on the sites are currently owned by 1715 Fleet Queen's Jewels, there is possibly at least $1 billion US worth of treasure that, as of this broadcast, is untouched. Given this, and combined with the 1985 valuing of the Atocha wreck, I am personally of the opinion that the original cargo valuation of 40 million pesos is either woefully inaccurate, that the cargo values have been changed unbelievably in the years since the cargo was made, or both, or that there was hidden cargo on that ship that we don't know about, and that the original value of the cargo for the entire fleet before any salvage operations were carried out is somewhere in the vicinity of at least 10 to 15 billion US dollars in today's currency for the entire fleet. Now, like I said at the start of this episode, that figure is my own personal opinion. It is not meant to be taken as definite fact, so please do not quote me on it. That's just my own personal opinion. It could be less, it could be more. I would love for someone who's an expert in this stuff to actually correct me on this. So just, yeah, bear in mind, this is just my opinion. All right, so on to shipwreck number two. Now, if you're a long-time listener of this podcast, you might recognize this shipwreck from the first Mysteries of Histories episode. This is a story of the Flor de la Mar. Flor do Mar, in English the Flower of the Sea, was a Portuguese carrack, a type of 3 or 4-masted ocean-going sailing ship commonly employed by Spain and Portugal from the 1500s to the 1600s, said to be the largest carrack of her time. She served in the conquest of Malacca as a support vessel despite being dangerously unseaworthy and 9 years old at the time, which is pretty ancient for ships of that era. When the Flor do Mar set sail from Malacca in late 1511 and sails into the Straits of Malacca near Sumatra, she was engulfed in a monster storm. Running aground near some shoals, she didn't survive the storm and sank on the night of November 20th, 1511. Her captain, Alfonso de Albuquerque, was saved in incredibly hostile conditions by using an improvised raft, but the cargo was irretrievably lost, as were more than 400 souls on board. To this day, the location of the wreck of the Flor do Mar is unknown. Numerous attempts have been made to find her on the seabed, but thanks to the fact that the maps used by Portuguese sailors at the time were ridiculously inaccurate, the exact location will almost certainly remain unknown. Many people have claimed to have found the wreck, but none of these claims have held up to intense scrutiny. In addition, the world has no idea as to the condition of the wreck. She could be in one piece or spread out over a large distance of the seabed, and after 500 years, she's going to be in pretty bad shape by now. To top it all off, Indonesia, Malaysia, and Portugal all have a claim to the salvage rights. So even if the Flor do Mar was found in international waters, the resulting legal argument over the ownership of the treasure would take decades to resolve at least. In my opinion, I don't think the Flor do Mar will be found in my lifetime, but I would dearly love to be proven wrong on this. As to how much was lost when the Flor do Mar went down, the common consensus is that her cargo is valued between $2.6 billion and $3 billion US in today's currency. Now, in other words, in 2023, that's between $4 billion and $4.5 billion Australian, between $2.1 billion and $2.43 billion British pounds, between $3.5 billion and $4.1 billion Canadian, between $2.4 billion and $2.8 billion Euro, between $80 billion and $92 billion Taiwan New Dollars, between $29 billion and $33 billion Norwegian Kronor, between $46 billion and $53 billion Mexican Pesos, or between $28 billion and $32 billion Swedish Kronor. As you can see, that is a huge amount on one shipwreck. That's why the Flor do Mar obviously is considered to be one of the wealthiest that ever went down, and for good reason. But like I said, I honestly don't see it being found anytime in the next decade or in my lifetime even. So yeah, like I said, I'd be love to prove them wrong on that. So if you're interested in maritime history and you want to study the Flor do Mar as your career in the future, go ahead. I think that'd be a great idea. Now for shipwreck number 3, the Sea of Cairo. And the Sea of Cairo is actually a very interesting one, not because of treasure, but because it broke a lot of records. Now the following is me reading out the BBC's article for the finding of the wreck back in 2015, and I quote, "Record dive rescues $50 million wartime silver from ocean floor. A British-led team has rescued $50 million, £34 million or €47 million, worth of silver coins from the ocean floor more than 70 years after a steamship carrying them from Bombay to England was torpedoed by a German U-boat. The city of Cairo was hit 772 kilometres, 480 miles, south of St. Helena in the Atlantic Ocean and sank to a depth of 5,150 metres. The effort to raise 100 tons of coins, which belong to Her Majesty's Treasury, is the deepest salvage operation in history. Silver rupees were called in by London in 1942 to help fund the war effort, but they never made it to Whitehall's coffers. On 6th November, a prowling U-boat spotted the steamship's tall plume of smoke and fired off a torpedo. 10 minutes later, amidst efforts to abandon ship, a second torpedo hit the Sea of Cairo and sealed its fate. The ship and its cargo was presumed lost until 2011, where a team led by British salvage expert John Kingsford located an unnatural object among the ridges and canyons of the South Atlantic search area. Under a contract with the UK government, Underwater Salvage's Deep Ocean Search, DOS, worked for several weeks searching a jumbled-up seafloor twice the size of London, Mr. Kingsford told the BBC. "We weren't convinced at first," he said, "but you have to give your team their head if they say they found something, so we looked," end quote. The object was indeed the Sea of Cairo, and the team recovered apparently a, quote, "large percentage," end quote, of the £34 million treasure chest. There was a lot of relief all around, Mr. Kingsford said. The coins have now been melted down in the UK and sold, with the undisclosed sum divided between the Treasury, who technically owns the coins, and the salvagers, who took a percentage of the sale. The salvage was completed in September 2013, but Deep Ocean Salvage has only now been given permission by the Minister of Transport to announce it. As for the coins, the team also brought up the propeller belonging to the second fatal torpedo. Shortly after that second torpedo sank 73 years ago, and the last remnants of the Sea of Cairo disappeared beneath the waves, the U-boat surfaced and approached the survivors' lifeboats. Its captain, Carl Friedrich Merton, famously directed them to the nearest land and said, "Good night, sorry for sinking you." Only 6 of the 311 people aboard died in the sinking, but it will be 3 weeks before any of them found the six lifeboats set out for land. In that time, 104 of the 305 survivors died. The British SS Clan Alpine picked up 154 survivors alive on the way to St. Helena, and a further 47 were rescued by a British merchant ship, the Benderen, and taken to Cape Town. A final lifeboat was discovered 51 days after sinking off the coast of South America, with only 2 of this many passengers alive. In a cruel twist of fate, one of the 2 men, 3rd Officer James Alistair White, died shortly after when the ship taking him home was torpedoed by a U-boat. After leaving the wreck for the final time, the divers left a plaque of honour of those who died, which read, "We came here with respect." It was a special salvage, Mr. Kingsford said. It does mean a lot. It was a very emotive case where over 100 people were lost having been in open boats. It meant a lot to our team to find the ship and remember it. End quote from the BBC article. Now, you might be wondering, what's the current condition of the wreck? Well, like I said, the wreck itself has been left on the bottom, and it's a very long way down, so there's no danger about people trying to salvage it illegally. Now, as of 2023, there is a huge ongoing legal dispute of the salvage rights for the silver of the wreck, because India said that they were Indian silver, so they want it back. However, like I said, the British government has already melted down the silver and has given it a half to the Treasury and half to the salvage company, so India is kicking up all kinds of a fuss over this. And understandably, I mean, granted, India was part of the British Empire at the time, but I'm not going to defend the British Empire. I mean, they were one of history's biggest villains. And so because of that, India has got a legit claim to this. And yet they've already gone and melted it down. So what are you going to do? Now, as of 2023, the $50 million US in silver equates to $64 million US, $99 million Australian, $52 million British pounds sterling, $87 million Canadian, €60 million Euro, nearly $2 billion Taiwan New Dollars, 708 million Norwegian kronor, 1,128,000,000 Mexican pesos, or roughly 692 Swedish kronor. Now, compared to some of the other shipwrecks that I've featured in this episode, like the Flor del Mar, or the Spanish Treasure Fleet, or even especially the San Jose, which we're about to talk about, that doesn't sound like that much. I get that. But consider the following statement. The Sea of Cairo lies at a depth of approximately 17,000 feet below the surface, roughly 5,150 meters. The Titanic, arguably one of the most famous shipwrecks of all times, and certainly the most famous shipwreck of modern times, lies at a depth of just 3,800 meters. That's 12,500 feet. And that is a nightmare to try and go down to. You've got to have specialized procedures. You've got to have special submersibles. It is not an easy ship to go to. So that means that the wreck of the Sea of Cairo is, as of this recording, easily the deepest shipwreck ever salvaged from in history. And that is worth talking about. That is cool. Alright, so our final shipwreck is actually one that's very difficult to talk about in regards to who owns the cargo. There's a whole big legal dispute. I'll tell you about it in a bit. But this is the story of the San Jose wreck. Now, San Jose was designed by Francisco Antonio Garrote and was built by Pedro de Arostegui in the shipyard at Mapil Usurbil Gipuzkoa. Sorry, my Spanish is not really that good. In Spain. Construction started in 1697 and ended in 1698. They built twin ships simultaneously and named them the San Jose and the San Joaquin. San Jose and San Joaquin were part of the Spanish Treasure Fleet during the War of the Spanish Succession, which we talked about earlier. It's the same war that was the instigator of the Spanish Treasure Fleet. So it's in the same time period. And they were under the command of General José Fernández de Santillán, the Count of Casa Alegre. On its final voyage, the San Jose sailed as a flagship of a treasure fleet comprised of 3 Spanish warships and 14 merchant vessels sailing from Portobelo, Panama to Cartagena, Colombia. On the 8th of June, 1708, the fleet encountered a British squadron near Baru, leading to a battle known as Wagers Action, I think that's how it's pronounced. During the battle, the powder magazines of the San Jose detonated, destroying and sinking the ship with most of her crew and the gold, silver, emeralds, and jewelry collected in the South American colonies to Spanish King's war effort. They all went down. Of the 600 people aboard, only 11 survived. That is a massive loss of life. Now, the wreck lay dormant for centuries, but in 2015, the Colombian government officially announced that they had found the wreck, but that the exact location would be kept classified as a state secret, arguably to protect the wreck from salvage operations. Now, why would they do this? Well, for one thing, you want to keep a wreck of this size really a tightly closed secret, but why were they worried about salvage? Well, see, in 2013, the president of Colombia at the time, Juan Santos, he signed a law into effect that states that anything of historical or cultural significance, which includes any and all shipwrecks that lie in Colombian waters, is the sole property of the Colombian government. Now, this is an extremely controversial law because Colombia is not a member of UNESCO. If you don't know what UNESCO is the official World Heritage branch of the United Nations. It protects and preserves World Heritage sites across the globe. Stuff like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, the Eiffel Tower, the Great Barrier Reef, the Great Pyramids of Giza. It's a huge, huge thing. But Colombia has very pointedly refused to join UNESCO. Why? I mean, you'd think it would be an easy deal, like they're getting the support of the UN. But here's the thing. Spain is a high-ranking member of UNESCO, and Colombia and Spain, they do not like each other. In addition, if Colombia became a member of UNESCO, UNESCO would automatically gain jurisdiction and authority over every single location of historical and cultural significance in Colombian territory and waters. This means that if a shipwreck was discovered that could have been flying a Spanish flag at the time of sinking, Spain would have just as much of a legal right to the wreck as Colombia, even if the wreck was clearly found in Colombian waters. Therefore, Colombia isn't part of UNESCO, which meant that up until very recently, Colombia was a haven for semi-legal or fully illegal marine salvage operations, because all you'd have to do was just pay the right people and you could keep the lot. And that is a big deal. So, Colombia's president signed the law in 2013, and in 2015, Colombia officially declared that they had found the wreck of the San Jose. Now, this sparked a wildfire of controversy. See, back in the late 90s, there was a salvage company, an American salvage company, I believe, that claimed to have found the San Jose wreck. They went to the Colombian government and said, hey, look, we want to salvage this wreck. We'll give you about 50-50 to split the salvage rights. Like, where we find, you can keep half, we can keep half. Now, remember what I said about the Spanish 15 treasure fleet? They have a deal with the Florida government that they can keep 80% of what they find as long as it goes to a museum, and the Florida government only gets 20%. Therefore, offering half to the Colombian government is a hugely generous deal on the part of the salvage company. However, Colombia basically said, no, we're keeping all of it. You'll get 5% and you'll be happy with it. The salvage company took them to court multiple times. And the U.S. government actually, this was not just in Colombian court. This was in the U.S. court. The U.S. government said, look, it's Colombia's ship. They can do what they want with it. Colombia has since been very, very tight-lipped as to whether or not the salvage company actually did find the wreck of the San Jose. They're not confirming or denying the coordinates that they found were accurate. But here's the thing. When Colombia officially announced in 2015 that they found the wreck of the San Jose, it went and it's a fuster clock. Pardon my French. See, Spain claims that the San Jose was flying a Spanish flag when she sunk, and therefore, the San Jose is officially a ship of state, and as such, at least half the wreck belongs to Spain under U.S. regulations, and they intend to legally defend that right. And that's one reason why Colombia has pointedly refused to join UNESCO, because if they did, every single wreck, Spain would be able to pull that kind of stuff on as well. Meanwhile, Peru and Bolivia have both put forward claims to the cargo, saying that because the gold, silver, and precious gems were mined from Peru and Bolivia without their consent, then they should get a portion of the cargo, never mind the fact that at the time, Peru and Bolivia had not yet gained independence from Spain. And in addition, there's an indigenous rights group, the Kata Kata, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, which claims that because their ancestors were forced to work on the mines that produced the cargo of the San Jose, they should get a share. And the salvage company I mentioned before, they're all up in arms saying, hang on, we found this back in the day, we deserve a piece. And through all of this, Colombia is basically saying, find his keepers, and is refusing to let anyone near the wreck or the artifacts they've found. They refuse to release the coordinates of the wreck to the public. They refuse to let anyone authenticate it. They're not letting anyone go near this. Now, to be completely honest with you folks, I don't foresee this legal mess getting solved anytime in the next 10 years or even within my lifetime. So if anything changes in this case, I will let you all know as soon as I can. But yeah, it is just one huge Gordian knot of a mess, and it's not going to be solved anytime soon, to be honest. Anyway, that's all for today, folks. Thanks for listening to The Raven's Grove. I've been Dahi. You've been awesome. I'll talk to the next episode. See ya.